funeral service. Navani remembered being like that, before Gavilar. He'd always promised that a unified Alethkar would be a wonderful blessing to all the people of the land. With him around, it always had been easier to rationalize the price in blood. Regardless of their feelings, they had to keep moving. They'd given Battalion Lord Teofil an hour to gather his assault force and send some initial sallies to clear the landing. During that time, Navani had gathered as much stormlight as she could. Her attendants carried the spheres and gemstones in large bags. The wait had let Navani send for two specific women. They stood near the center of the huddle of attendants, Thalen scholars from Queen Fen's court, who were visiting the tower to listen to Navani's lectures. They'd come to her command post willingly, probably believing that Navani had sent for them because she wanted to protect them during the invasion. Their panicked glances now showed they were beginning to question those assumptions. A soldier stood guarding the way through a particular hallway. Navani hurried in that direction, leaving her attendants behind for now. She entered a large open hall that in times past they'd used as a meeting place. Some 500 soldiers crowded the corners and a couple of side corridors. Not fully out of sight, but obscured enough for their purpose. Other than the numerous crossbowmen among them, the items of most interest were two large metal pillars on wheels. Teofil noticed her and stepped over.
"Brightness," he said. "I'd be more comfortable if you waited closer to the steps."
"Objection noted," Navani said. "How does it look?"
"I've gathered our best veterans," he said. "This will be bloody work, but I think we have a chance. The enemy is relying on the Regals to seize the ground floor. I keep reminding the men that as frightening as the enemy powers are, the ones using them have only a year of training."
The human advantage had so far been their experience. Parshmen newly awakened from their lives of slavery were no replacement for battle-hardened troops. This advantage was slowly being worn away as enemy troops gained more and more practical combat experience. An exhausted messenger dashed into the room from the hallway directly across from Navani, the hallway leading toward the steps to the basement. The messenger nodded to Teofil before moving to the side and putting her hands on her knees, breathing in deep gasps. Teofil gestured for Navani to retreat, and she moved to the mouth of the corridor. She didn't retreat farther than that, so Teofil stoically walked over and handed her some wax and pointed at his ears. Then he fell into position, sword out, with one group of soldiers. A controlled retreat was difficult enough, but what they were trying here, a fake rout leading to an ambush, was even trickier. You had to bait the enemy into thinking you were fleeing, and that involved turning your backs on them. A trickle of human soldiers soon came running into the room, and their panic seemed real to Navani. It probably was. The line between a feint and a true collapse of morale was thin as a sheet of paper. The trickle of soldiers became a flood. Fleeing men, chased by flashes of light and thunder that made Navani hastily stuff her ears with the wax. She spared a moment of grief for the slowest of the fleeing soldiers, who sold this ruse with their lives, dying in a bright flash of lightning. The chasing Regals soon charged into the room, wicked-looking singers with pointed carapace and glowing red eyes. Teofil waited longer than Navani would have to give the order to loose. He wanted as many Regals in the room as possible. The pause was long enough that the first of the enemies had time to stop, then raise arms crackling with electric energy. Navani braced herself as they released flashes of light toward the waiting soldiers. Those flashes, however, struck the carefully placed metal pillars, which drew the lightning like tall trees might in an open field. Teofil gave the order with a raised piece of red cloth. Though Navani barely saw it, as she was blinking blinded eyes. Crossbows loosed in wave after deadly wave, cutting down the regals, who didn't have the same power to heal themselves that the fused possessed.
"Hoist those lightning rods!"
Teofil shouted, his voice sounding muted to her ears.
"Move, men! Stay away from blood on the ground! We push for the basement!"
As quickly as that, the rout reversed, and human troops piled into the hallway to chase the remaining regals. Teofil left her with a salute. He set out on a near impossible task, to push down a long stairwell into the basement, harried by regals and fused. If Navani wasn't able to get to him after he reached the pillar, he was to destroy the construction of garnets that suppressed radiant powers. The sibling indicated this would be effective at restoring the radiance. In the meantime, Navani's job was to activate the sibling's failsafe. She hurried to collect her scribes, hoping they wouldn't balk too much at climbing over the corpses.
Kaladin ducked into a room carrying an armful of blankets. He didn't recognize the young family inside, father, mother, two toddlers, so they had to be refugees who had fled to Hearthstone. The young family had done much to make this small, windowless room their own. Both walls were covered in Herdazian sand paintings, and the floor was painted in a large and intricate glyph. Kaladin didn't like the way they cringed as he entered, the children whimpering. "If you don't want people to cringe when they see you," he thought, "act less like a ruffian and more like a surgeon." He never had possessed his father's gentle grace, that unassuming way that wasn't weak but also rarely seemed threatening. "Sorry," Kaladin said, shutting the door behind him. "I know you were expecting my father. You wanted blankets?"
"Yes,"
the wife said, rising and taking them from him.
"Thank you. It cold."
"I know," Kaladin said. "Something's wrong with the tower, so heating fabrials aren't working." The man said something in Herdazian. Syl, sitting on Kaladin's shoulder, whispered the interpretation, but the woman translated right afterward anyway.
"Dark ones in the corridors," the woman said. "They are staying?"
"We don't know yet," Kaladin said. "For now, it's best to remain in your rooms. Here, I brought water and some rations. Soulcast, I'm afraid. We'll send someone around tomorrow to gather chamber pots if it comes to that." He slung his pack onto his shoulder after getting out the food and water. Then he slipped back out into the corridor. He had three more rooms to visit before meeting up with his father. "What time is it?" he asked Syl.
"Late," she said. "A few hours to dawn."
Kaladin had been working to deliver blankets and water for a good hour or so. He knew that fighting was still going on far below, that Navani was holding out. The enemy, however, had quickly secured this floor, leaving guards and pushing downward to press against the Alethi defenders. So while the tower wasn't yet lost, Kaladin's floor felt quiet. Syl turned around and lifted into the air, shimmering and becoming formless like a cloud.
"I keep seeing things, Kaladin. Streaks of red. Voidspren, I think, patrolling the halls."
"You can see them even if they're invisible to humans, right?" She nodded.
"But they can see me, too. My cognitive aspect."
A part of him wanted to ask further. Why, for instance, could Rock always see her? Was he somehow part Spren? Lift seemed to be able to do it, too, though she wouldn't speak about it. So was she part Horn Eater? The other Edge Dancers didn't have the ability. The questions wouldn't form on his lips. He was distracted, and honestly, he was exhausted. He let the thoughts slip away as he moved to the next room on his list. These ones would probably be extra frightened, having not heard anything since.
"Kaladin!"
Syl hissed. He stopped immediately, then looked up, noting a Stormform Regal walking down the hallway with a sphere lantern in one hand, a sword on his hip.
"You there," he said, speaking with a rhythm but otherwise no hint of an accent. "Why are you out of your rooms?"
"I'm a surgeon," Kaladin said. I was told by one of the Fused that I could check on our people. I'm delivering food and water. The singer sized him up, then waved for him to open his pack and show what was inside. Kaladin obliged, and didn't look toward Syl, who was doing her wind sprint act, flitting about and pretending she didn't belong with a Radiant, just in case. The singer inspected the rations, then studied Kaladin. Looking at my arms, my chest, Kaladin thought, wondering why a surgeon is built like a soldier. At least his brands were covered by his long hair.
"Return to your rooms," the man said.
"The others will be frightened," Kaladin said. "You could have hysterical people on your hands, chaos that would interfere with your troops."
"And how often did you check on the parchmen of your village when they were frightened?" the singer asked. "When they were forced into dark rooms, locked away and ignored. Did you spare any concern for them, surgeon?"
Kaladin bit off a response. This wasn't the kind of taunt where the speaker wanted an answer. Instead, he looked down. The singer in turn stepped forward and snapped his hand at Kaladin to strike him. Kaladin moved without thinking, raising his hand to catch the singer's wrist before it connected. He felt a small jolt of something when he touched the carapace-backed hand. The singer grinned.
"A surgeon, you say?"
"You've never heard of a battlefield medic?" Kaladin said. "I've trained with the men so I can handle myself. But you can ask anyone in this town if I'm the surgeon's son and they'll confirm it." The singer shoved at Kaladin's hand, trying to throw him off balance. But Kaladin's stance was solid. He met the red eyes and saw the smile in them, the eagerness. This creature wanted a fight. Likely he was angry he'd been posted to something as boring as patrolling halls on what was to have been a daring and dangerous mission. He'd love nothing more than to have an excuse for a little excitement. Kaladin's grip tightened on the man's hand. His heartbeat sped up and he found himself reaching for the stormlight at his belt. Draw in a breath, suck it in, end this farce. Enemies were invading the tower and he was delivering blankets? He held those red eyes with his own. He heard his heart thundering. Then he forced himself to look away and let the singer shove him into the wall, then trip him with a sweep to his legs. The creature loomed over him, and Kaladin kept his eyes down. You learned to do that when you were a slave. The creature snorted and stomped away without another word, leaving Kaladin. He felt tense, alert, like he often did before a battle. His fatigue washed away. He wanted to act. Instead, he continued on his way, delivering comfort to the people of Hearthstone.
42. Armor and Teeth.
In truth, it would be a combination of a vessel's craftiness and the power's intent that we should fear most.
Navani and her timid attendants soon left the broad hallway scattered with corpses and entered a series of corridors with darkened lanterns on the walls. The broken latches bespoke thieves with crowbars getting at the spheres inside. For some people, no nightmare was terrible enough, no war bloody enough, to discourage some creative personal enrichment. The sounds of screams and echoes of thunder faded. Navani felt as if she were entering the mythical center beat, the heart of a high storm spoken of by some poor wanderers trapped within its winds. A moment when, for reasons inexplicable, the wind stopped and all became still. She eventually reached the place where the sibling had told her to go, a specific intersection among these twisting corridors. Though no part of the first level went completely unused, this area was among the least trafficked. The corridors here made a maze of frustrating design, and they used the small rooms for various storage dumps.
"Now what?"
asked Elphabar, the storm warden. Navani wasn't particularly happy to have the tall man along. He looked silly with his pointed beard and his mysterious robes. But he'd been in the map room with them, and forbidding him hadn't seemed right, when she needed every mind she could get. "Search this area," Navani said to the others. "See if you can find a vein of garnet on the walls. It might be small and hidden among the changing colors of the strata." They did as she requested. Dabid, the mute bridgeman, started searching on the floor instead of the walls, working with his sphere enclosed entirely in his hand, so it gave almost no light. "Cover up your spheres and lanterns," Navani said to the others. The command drew expressions that ranged between confused and horrified, but Navani led the way, closing the shield on her lantern. The others obeyed one at a time, plunging the room into darkness. Light from a distant corridor flashed red in a sequence, only with no thunder. A few people's hands glowed softly from the spheres inside, backlighting veins and bones. "There," Navani said, picking out a faint twinkling on the floor near one of the walls. They clustered around it, investigating the spark of garnet light in a hidden vein of crystal. "What is it?" Isabi asked. "What kind of spren?" The light started moving through the vein, across the floor, then down the corridor. Navani ignored the questions, following the spark until it moved up a wall. Here it followed the curving strata into a specific room, rounding the stone and slipping through the gap between door and doorway. Venan had keys, fortunately. Inside, they had to step over rolled rugs to find the spark of light at the rear. Navani brushed her fingers against it and found a small bulge in the wall. A gemstone, she realized, connected to the line of crystal. It's embedded in here so deeply it's difficult to see. Seemed to be a topaz. Hadn't there been a similar gemstone embedded into the wall of that room where they'd found the model of the tower? "Infuse the topaz," the sibling's voice said in her mind. "You can do this without radiance. I have seen you perform such marvels." "I need several small topazes," Navani said to her scholars. "No larger than 3 kivs each." Her team scrambled. They kept gemstones of all sizes on hand for their experiments, and one soon brought forth a small case of infused topazes. Navani instructed her and several others to take the gemstones in tweezers and present them to the topaz set into the wall. An infused gemstone touched to an uninfused one could be made to lend some of its stormlight, assuming they were the same variety, and the uninfused gemstone was much larger than the infused ones. It worked a little like a pressure differential. A large empty vessel would take stormlight from small, full vessels. It was a slow process, especially when the gemstone you wanted to infuse was relatively small, limiting the potential size differential. She moved up next to Ulvulk and Vrandl, the 2 Thalen scholars. Both were artifabrians of a very secretive guild. "Almighty send, we can make this work in time," Navani said, as thunder echoed behind them.
"So that is why you brought us," Vrandl said.
She was a short woman who preferred Havas to traditional Thalen dress. She wore her eyebrows in tight curls.
"The tower is invaded. Your men are dying, and you see an opportunity to pry trade secrets from our fingers."
"The world is ending," Navani countered, "and our greatest advantage, this tower, with its ability to instantly move troops from one end of Roshar to the other, is threatened. Is this really the time to hoard trade secrets, Brightness?" The 2 women didn't reply.
"You'd watch it burn," Navani said, feeling exhausted and snappish. "You'd actually let Urithiru fall rather than share what you know? If we lose the Oath Gates permanently, that's it for the war. That's it for your homeland."
Again they remained silent.
"Fine," Navani said.
"I hope when you die, knowing your homeland is doomed, your family's enslaved, your queen executed,
you feel satisfied knowing that at least you maintained a slight market advantage. Navani pushed to the front of the group, where her scholars were coaxing Stormlight into the wall gem, bit by bit. Often a fabrial needed to fill a certain percentage before it activated, but the more this one drew in Stormlight, the slower the drain would occur. Footsteps scraped the stone behind her, and Navani turned to see Ulvulk, junior of the two Thalen scholars, standing behind her.
"We're sound," she whispered. "If you can make the gemstone vibrate at a certain frequency, it will draw in Stormlight regardless of the size of gems placed next to it."
"Frequency," Navani said.
"How did you discover this?" "Traditions," she whispered. "Passed down for centuries."
"Create a vibration," Navani said. "You use drilled holes?"
"No.
That would require Stormlight to be already infused. Tuning forks?"
"Yes," Ulvulk explained. "We touch the tuning fork against the full gemstone, making it vibrate. Then can lead a line of Stormlight out to the empty one. After that it will siphon, like liquid."
"Do you have the equipment here, now?" Navani asked.
"Aye."
"Of course you do," Navani said. "When I sent runners to fetch you, you thought I was going to evacuate you. You'd have grabbed anything of value in your rooms." The young Thalen woman fished in her pocket, pulling out a metal tuning fork.
"You will be expelled from the guild,"
Vrandel snapped from behind, anger spren pooling beneath her.
"This is a ploy."
"It's no ploy," Navani assured the nervous young woman. "Honestly, we were close to a breakthrough using the weapons the fused have, which are able to drain Stormlight out of a person. All you've done here is potentially save this tower from invaders." Navani tried the method, hitting the tuning fork, then touching one of the infused gemstones. Indeed, as she pulled it away from the stone and toward the gemstone on the wall, it trailed a small stream of Stormlight, like how the light behaved when a radiant was sucking it in. That did the trick, infusing the wall gemstone in seconds. The sibling had explained what was coming, but Navani still jumped when, upon being infused, the fabrial made the entire wall shake. It parted at the center. It had been a hidden door all along, locked by a fabrial that in the old days probably only a radiant could have activated. They quickly uncovered their lanterns and spheres, revealing a small circular chamber with a pedestal in the center. Set into that was a large sapphire, uninfused. "Quickly," Navani said to the others. "Let's get to work."
Kaladin slung his pack over his shoulder, then slipped out of the room of another frightened family. This one, like those before, had asked him for news, for information, for promises. Was it going to be all right? Would the other radiants rise as he had? When would the bondsmith return? He wished he had answers. He felt so blind. He'd grown accustomed to being in the thick of everything important, privy to not only the plans of important people, but their worries and their fears as well. He followed Syl, who darted into the hallway. The hour was late, and Kaladin had to fight off a bout of grogginess despite the shakes and thumps in the stone. Distant explosions from far below, so powerful they had to be the acts of regals or fused. Somewhere in the tower, men fought. But up here on the sixth floor, they cowered. The place dripped with the silence of 1,000 frightened people. He reached an intersection, fighting off his fatigue. He was supposed to get back to the clinic and meet up with his father. But Syl was flitting around another way. She clearly wanted his attention. They had decided to keep her distant from him in case a Voidspren noticed her. He followed her down the left fork through a doorway that led out onto the large patio-like balcony near his quarters. Though many of these balconies were being used as community spots, this one was empty tonight, save for one figure standing near the edge. The carapace jutting out through holes in the uniform made Relaine distinctive even in silhouette. "Hey," Kaladin said, stepping up to him. Syl settled on the banister, glowing softly. Kaladin found it eerie to stare out in the darkness of night, overlooking an endless landscape of mountains and clouds, shimmering green from the final moon. "More troops," Relaine said, nodding toward the plateau below, where another formation of singers was moving toward the tower's front gates. "They march like human armies, not like listener war pairs." "I thought you were going to stay hidden in the clinic."
"This will be an occupation, Cal," Relaine said, voice tinged with a mournful rhythm. "We won't be recovering Urethiru tonight, or any time soon. So where does that leave me?"
"You're not one of them."
"Am I one of you?"
"You'll always be a member of Bridge Four."
"That's not what I meant."
Relaine turned toward him, green moonlight shining against his carapace and skin.
"If I try to hide among the humans, I will be courting disaster. Assuming I could somehow stay out of sight, someone is going to reveal me to the Fused. Someone will think I'm a spy for the enemy. And after that, well, it's going to be very difficult to explain why I didn't walk out and embrace their occupation."
Kaladin wanted to object, but Storms, he was worried about a similar thing happening to him. One mention that he'd been a Radiant, that the surgeon's son was Kaladin Stormblessed Windrunner, and, well, who knew what would happen?
"So what do you do?"
Syl asked from the railing.
"Go to them," Relaine said. "Pretend I'm not a listener, just an ordinary parshman who never managed to escape, and didn't know what I should do. It might work. Either that, or maybe I can hide among them, pretend I've always been with them, merely another face in their forces."
"And if they take you out into the Everstorm?" Kaladin asked. "Demand you take a regal form, or worse, give yourself up to the soul of a Fused?"
"Then I'll have to find a way to escape, won't I?" Relaine said. "This has been coming, Cal. I think I've always known I would have to face them. I could make a home here if I wanted. I know that, and I'll always be grateful to you and the others for making a place for me. At the same time, I can't ignore what was done to my people at the hands of human empires. I won't be fully comfortable here. Not while I wonder if there are other listeners out there who survived the Everstorm. Not while I wonder if there's more I could be doing to stop the disaster."
Kaladin took a deep breath, though part of him was tearing inside.
"Another farewell, then."
"A temporary one, I hope,"
Relaine said. Then, looking somewhat awkward, he held out his hands and gave Kaladin an embrace. Relaine had never seemed fond of that human custom, but Kaladin was glad for the gesture.
"Thank you," Relaine said, pulling back, "for trusting me to make this decision."
"That's what you said you wanted all those months ago," Kaladin said,
"when I promised I'd listen." "To be trusted and acknowledged," Relaine said.
"I keep my oaths, Relaine, especially to friends."
"I'm not going to join them, Cal. I am a spy. That is my training, as best my kind could offer. I'll find a way to help from the inside. Remember that the first people Odium destroyed when he returned were not human, but listener."
"Bridge Four," Kaladin said.
"Life before death," Relaine returned.
Then he slipped away toward the interior of the tower. Syl remained seated on the banister. Kaladin leaned against the stone, waiting for a cheerful line from Syl. When others tried to console him with laughs, it often struck him as false, unnecessary. But from her, well, she helped pull him out of the deep waters.
"They're all going to leave, aren't they?"
she whispered instead.
"Moash, Rock, now Relaine. Every one of them. They're going to leave. Or... or worse.
She looked at Kaladin, uncharacteristically solemn.
They'll all go away, and then there will be nothingness.
Still, Kaladin said, you shouldn't say things like that.
It's true, though, she said, isn't it?
I won't leave you.
Like you almost did, she said softly. My old knight, he didn't want to leave. It's not his fault. He was mortal, though. Everyone dies. Except me.
Syl, Kaladin said, what's wrong? Is whatever they did to the tower affecting you? She was silent for a time, staring out over the green clouds.
Yes, of course, she said. I'm sorry. That's not what you needed, is it? I can be perky. I can be happy. See?
She launched into the air, becoming a line of light that zipped around his head. I didn't mean, Kaladin said.
Don't be such a worrier, she cut in. Can't you take a joke these days, Kaladin? Come on, we need to get back to the clinic.
She zipped off and, confused, worried, but most of all just exhausted, he followed.
Navani watched as her people worked, infusing the gemstone at the center of the small chamber. They had borrowed a second tuning fork from the Thalen scholars, doubling their speed. Such a simple tool. She and Rushu had theorized for hours about the process the Thalen artifabrians were using, guessing everything from hidden radiance to intricate machinery that mimicked water osmosis methods, which followed similar scientific principles to light infusion. In the end, their actual method was far, far humbler. Wasn't that often how it turned out? Science seemed easy in retrospect. Why hadn't the ancients figured out you could intentionally trap a spren in a gemstone? Why hadn't they discovered that a split gemstone would be paired? Add a little aluminum for the cage, and you could do incredible things. With this knowledge, people 4,000 years ago could have had flying ships as easily as Navani's people. True, the hundreds of tiny leaps that led to advances were not as intuitive as they seemed. Regardless, it left Navani wondering. What wonders could she create if she knew the next few leaps that would appear simple to her descendants? What marvelous creations did she brush past each day, lying in pieces, waiting to be combined? More thunder sounded. She hoped that the continued noise was a good sign for Tearfill and his men. Move faster, she willed the stormlight. Unfortunately, something was odd about this gemstone. Though the new Thalen method did indeed transfer stormlight quickly, the strange fabril seemed to be drinking far too much in. They'd emptied most of the spheres they'd brought, and still the sapphire barely glowed. They seemed to be injecting light not just into the gemstone, but into the entire network of gemstones and crystal veins. Was it actually a fabril? Navani didn't recognize the cage, though it did have metal wire running around it. And why did it have a glass globe the size of her fist, set off to the side in its own nook and attached to the gemstone by wires? As her scholars worked, emptying one gemstone after the other, Navani brushed the back of her freehand fingers against a vein of garnet in the wall.
You must move quickly, the siblings said in her mind. We are going as fast as we can, Navani whispered. Are my soldiers still alive? I cannot see them, the siblings said. My vision is limited in ways that are confusing to me, as it was not always so. But I think the soldiers you sent are close. I can hear shouts nearby the crystal heart of the tower. Navani closed her eyes, hoping the Almighty would accept a whispered prayer, as she had no glyphord to burn. Hurry, the siblings said. Hurry. She glanced toward the pile of gemstones. Fortunately,
The Thalen method could move Stormlight between different types of pole stone.
We are trying.
Do you know why Spren prefer different kinds of gemstones?
Because they are different, the siblings said. Why do humans prefer one kind of food to another?
Yet food dyed different colors, but with the same taste, are often equally acceptable to us. Navani nodded to a small pile of emeralds.
Many gemstones are identical, at least by their structure. We think they might even have the same basic chemical composition.
Color is like flavor to Spren, the siblings said. It is part of the soul of a thing.
Curious.
You must move quickly, the sibling repeated.
The Lady of Pains has the surge of transformation and dangerous knowledge. She will infuse my entire heart, the pillar, in the proper order, using her void light. In so doing, she would corrupt me and leave me. Leave me as one of the unmade.
And what we do here will defend you, Navani whispered.
Yes, it will erect a barrier preventing anyone, human, unmade, or singer, from reaching me.
That would stop Teofil too, Navani said, from breaking the construction that is blocking our radiance.
Teofil is doomed, the siblings said. You must hurry.
Navani, they have activated the Oath Gate again. Fresh enemy troops have arrived.
How are they working it?
They have skybreakers, but they should be as limited as our radiance, right?
They brought a human with one of the honor blades.
Moash, the murderer. Navani felt her anger rising. There was unfortunately little more she could do.
Quickly, please, quickly.
The sibling seemed to hesitate.
Wait. Something has happened. The Lady of Pains has stopped.
Venli witnessed the last push of the human soldiers. She stood at the base of the steps, which were of an odd sort. The stairwell up to the ground floor was a large column of open space. Steps wound around the outside wall of the cylinder. They looked so narrow and uncertain, hanging as they did with a cavity of open space up the center. It was pure madness to attempt to fight down such steep and uncertain footing while harried by fused and regals. Yet the humans made a valiant run of it. They locked shields and moved together with a precision that Venli's sister had always admired. While listeners would fight as war pairs, in tune with one another and the rhythms of Roshar, humans seemed to have their own kind of symbiosis, forged from hours upon hours spent training. A canopy of shields protected against heavenly ones, who hovered above the formation, trying to stab with their lances, but indoors they didn't have proper room to maneuver. Before beginning their assault, the humans had poured barrels of water into the breach here, and it had rained upon the Stormform regals below. Their powers reacted poorly around water, something Venli had always found somewhat ironic. The descent was so dramatic that Venli sent for Raboniel, interrupting the fused's work with the pillar. Raboniel marched out and looked up with shock at how close the humans were.
Quickly, she snapped at the nearby storm forms. Up those steps! Engage the soldiers directly!
They obeyed, but with their powers dampened by the water, they were no match for the troops. The humans stabbed them dead or forced them off the sides of the steps, pushing ever downward, rounding the circular wall, grimly stepping over the bodies of their fallen comrades and maintaining a front line that was three men wide.
Amazing, Raboniel whispered.
The humans fought like a great shelled beast, a winding, relentless chasm fiend, all armor and teeth. Raboniel waved for the rest of the deepest ones to join the fight, but even these proved ineffective. They had disrupted the formation a few times early on, shoving their hands out of walls to push men, or reaching out from the side to grab ankles, These soldiers, however, quickly adapted. The men closest to the wall now marched with swords out, watching for deepest ones. More than one disembodied arm dropped to the ground near Venli, joining the fallen men and regals who had lost their footing. Standing there beside an increasingly angry Raboniel, Venli thought the humans might make it. Led by a grizzled older soldier, and reduced from hundreds to just 50, they barreled stubbornly onward. Venli found herself cheering them silently, timber exulting to the rhythm of hope. She cared little for the humans as a whole, but it was impossible to watch such a display of tenacity without being impressed. This was why her people had dwindled, nearly vanished, during their years at war with the humans. It wasn't entirely the human access to shards or their incredible resources. It was the way they, individually weaker than any listener, worked together. They had no forms, but compensated with training, sacrificing individuality until they were practically spren, having become so good at a single thing they could never change to another purpose. They rounded the next loop, only 20 feet from the ground, while Raboniel began shouting for more deepest ones. Then a red line of light zipped down from above. The pursuer had arrived. He materialized in the very center of the formation of humans, swinging out with arms bearing sharpened carapace. The formation shattered as the men frantically tried to reorient to this new foe. But of course the pursuer zipped back into the air. He left behind a dummy, a fake carapace version of himself. The humans began stabbing it repeatedly as the real pursuer appeared with a crash among another segment of the line. As quickly as that, the tide changed. The heavenly ones found holes in the shield wall to begin stabbing individual humans. The deepest ones used the confusion to grab sword arms or trip soldiers. A small group of humans, led by the older veteran, tried to surge forward and dash the rest of the way. But the regals near Venli had toweled dry, and they managed to unleash a collective bolt of lightning that destroyed the steps in a wide gap right in front of the men. The human leader and the men closest to him dropped with the rubble to die. The rest began a frantic attempt at retreat. It ended quickly. Raboniel changed her rhythm to one of relief, then strode back into the mural-lined corridor toward the pillar. Unwilling to watch the final slaughter, Venli turned and scurried alongside her. The sounds of bodies falling, the din of armor against stone, chased them all the way.
"It is done," the sibling whispered to Navani. "Your men have fallen."
"Are you certain?" Navani asked. "What do you see?"
"I used to be able to watch the entire tower. Now, I see just patches. A small portion of the sixth floor. A room on the fourth floor with a cage in it. The place nearest the Lady of Pains. She returns. She will kill me now."
The large gemstone her people had been working on, finally primed with stormlight, began glowing brightly. The light inside it started to shift and dance, furious. Then it drained away, vanishing. Navani felt a spike of alarm until the siblings spoke into her mind.
"It worked. Melishi, I have hated you, but now I bless you. It worked. I am safe, for now."
Navani let out a relieved breath.
"If they reach the gemstone you just infused," the sibling said, "they could corrupt me through it. You will need to destroy it."
"Will that break the shield?" Navani forced out.
"No, it will weaken the shield, but that is better than the alternative. You cannot defend this place. Your soldiers on the steps have fallen."
She breathed out, and would remember to burn a prayer for the fallen when she could. But if Teofil had been killed, then the tower was captured. Navani's only course was to surrender. She would have to hope that the barrier would last long enough, either for Dalinar to reach them, or for Navani to find a way to free the Radiance. Assuming she wasn't killed. The Fused did not often slaughter indiscriminately, but there were reports of them executing high-ranking Light Eyes. That depended on the Fused who led the individual forces, and how much the people resisted. "Shatter that sapphire," she said to her scholars. "Destroy the entire Fabrial, cage included, and that glass globe. Send people to both the map room and the information vault to burn our maps of the tower. The rest of you, join me. We must find a way to deliver a formal surrender without being killed before we can make our intentions known." Raboniel approached the pillar again with some eagerness. Venli stood nearby as the Fused reached up to touch a specific set of gemstones that were embedded in the construction, then began infusing those with void light. As soon as she'd begun, though, she hesitated.
"Something curious is happening here. There is stormlight in the system. That shouldn't be possible. The sibling cannot create it."
"I thought that stormlight was what the Radiants and their Fabrials always used," Venli said.
"The tower is something else."
She glanced at Venli, noting her confusion, and unlike many Fused, she chose to explain.
"The sibling, the tower, Urithiru, is the child of honor and cultivation, created to fight odium. The place runs on the sibling's light, a mixture of the essences of its parents. Stormlight alone shouldn't be able to work the tower's core systems. Stormlight to the sibling is incomplete, like a key missing several of its teeth."
"And with void light, you're using a key with no teeth?" Venli asked.
"I'm not using a key at all. I'm breaking the lock."
Raboniel put her hands on the pillar, infusing another specific gemstone.
"The sibling is insensate, completely unaware that we are here. That I can determine. I can corrupt them, awaken them to serve us, just as I expected. But also, there is stormlight. I feel it, a large amount. Perhaps it's simply the power they're using to work the pumps or the lifts. Not true parts of the sibling. Systems added later, attached to the construction. Those could take stormlight alone."
Raboniel stopped and stepped back, humming to craving, a rhythm to indicate confusion or a question. And then a wave of blue light began to expand from the pillar. She stumbled away and Venli joined her, dashing out into the corridor, where the blue light stopped and seemed to solidify, blocking the way. Raboniel stepped forward and rested a hand on it.
"Solid," she said, "and powered by stormlight, judging by the tone."
Venli anticipated anger. This shield, whatever it was, clearly thwarted whatever the Lady of Wishes was doing. Instead, she seemed fascinated.
"Remarkable, truly remarkable," Raboniel said, tapping the shield with her knife.
It clicked like glass when touched.
"This is incredible."
"Does it ruin our plans?" Venli asked.
"Absolutely."
"And you don't mind?"
"Of course not. This is going to be so interesting to crack open. I was right. The answers, the way to end the war, must be here."
A shimmer of red lightning moved across the ground up the hallway. Venli had seen this before, a spren like lightning running along a surface. Indeed, it materialized into the shape of a small human, not a singer, but a human, with odd eyes and hair that waved in an unseen wind.
Ulim,
the first Voidspren she'd ever met, all those years ago.
Lady of Wishes, he said, performing a flowery bow. We have located the Blackthorn's wife, queen of this tower.
Oh? Raboniel asked. Where was she hiding?
A deepest one, the Caller of Springs, found her near a strange fabrial that is now unfortunately destroyed. The Caller summoned a force and captured Queen Blackthorn, who has come peacefully. She is now asking to speak with whomever was leading our assault. Shall I have her killed?
Don't be wasteful, Ulim, Raboniel said. The Blackthorn's wife will make a very useful pawn. I would have thought better of you.
Normally I would be nothing but eager for a new toy, Ulim said. But this woman is dangerous and crafty. Reports say she's the one who created the flying machine that raided Alethkar last month.
Then we certainly won't kill her, Raboniel said.
She could be seen as a symbol to the people of this tower, Ulim said.
Then the small Spren cocked his head, looking at the shield covering the doorway.
What's that?
You only just noticed it? Venli asked. Ulim glanced at her, then turned away, pretending to ignore her. What did he think of Venli now, all these years later? He'd made such promises to her. Was he embarrassed that she'd lived, knowing what a liar he was?
It is a puzzle, Raboniel said. Come, I would meet this queen of the tower.
Navani composed herself, standing with hands clasped before her, surrounded by singer soldiers. Though the effects of fatigue made her want to droop, she kept her head high. She wished she had chosen a formal hava today, instead of this simple work dress with a gloved hand, but that couldn't be helped. A queen was a queen, regardless of what she wore. She kept her expression calm, though she wasn't certain whether she was awaiting imprisonment or death. They had immediately separated her from the others, naturally, and had taken her arm sheath with its fabrials. She wished she could burn a prayer to the Almighty that her scholars would be kept safe. The only reason to surrender was to protect them and the others of the tower. In this, the Fused had been wise. They'd made it clear time and time again that they didn't slaughter populations who surrendered. You always knew you had an out. All you had to do was submit. It was the same lesson that Gavilar and Navani herself had taught many, many years ago. Cities that had joined the unified Alethkar had prospered. Of course, with Gavilar and Dalinar involved, there had always been an explicit addition to that lesson. Fail to submit, and you would be sent the Blackthorn. With those memories haunting her, it was difficult to evoke any sense of outrage as the enemy soldiers led her down the steps. How could Navani feel outrage at having done to her what she'd willingly done to others? It was the enormous flaw in Gavilar's reasoning. If their strength justified their rule of Alethkar, then what happened when someone stronger came along? It was a system that ensured there would always be war, a constant clash for rule. She was able to use such high-minded philosophical thoughts to distract her, up until she saw the first bodies. They lay slumped against the wall, in the crook of the steps, men in Roian uniforms, men with two young faces, slaughtered as they'd tried to push for the crystal pillar. Men she'd sent to their deaths. Navani steeled herself, but had to walk through their blood to proceed. Vorin teachings abhorred gambling, and Navani had often been proud that she avoided such games of chance. Yet she gambled with lives, didn't she? The blood was pervasive, dribbling down steps, threatening to make her slip. One of her captors placed a strong hand under her arm as they marched her around and around, passing breaks in the wooden railing where the fighting had grown intense. At the bottom, she found a pile of corpses, including some in Kolin uniforms.
Poor Teofil and his men. It seemed they'd almost made it, judging by the fact that a Heavenly One had to fly Navani over a break in the steps, where a few last corpses slumped, bespeaking their final moments.
Thank you, Teofil, she thought, and all of you.
If the tower had a chance, it came because these men had bought her time. Even if they hadn't reached the pillar, they had done something remarkable. She would remember that sacrifice. At the base of the steps, she was marched through the hallway with the murals. As she walked, she found herself proud of how much of a fight they'd put up. Not only Teofil and the soldiers, but the entire tower. Yes, it had taken less than half a day for the fuse to conquer all of Urithiru. But considering Navani's lack of radiance and shards, it was remarkable to have lasted that long. She felt particularly satisfied with their efforts when she saw the glowing blue light at the end of the hallway, blocking off the way to the pillar room. Odd that she should feel most a queen in the moments before the position was taken from her. The soldiers steered her into the larger of the two library rooms, where a tall female infused stood in light armor, looking over papers from one of the many stacks in the room. Navani's most precious engineering and design secrets. The fused had a strange hairstyle, with carapace covering nearly her entire head, save for a topknot-style bundle of thick orange singer hair. The way the guards presented Navani made it clear that this was the leader. The fused continued to read, barely acknowledging Navani.
I am ready to discuss terms of surrender, Navani finally said.
A lithe regal stepped to the female's side.
Rabonia, Lady of Wishes, is not to be directly addressed by...
She was interrupted by the fused saying something. Whatever it was, the regal didn't seem to have expected it, for when she spoke again, her voice cadence had changed markedly.
The lady says she comes to me as a queen, though she will leave without the title. For now, she may speak when she wishes, as befitting her rank. Then let me offer surrender, Navani said. My soldiers have been instructed to turn in their arms, should you approach with the proper sign given. Proof that we've reached an accord.
I will require your radiance, the fused, Raboniel, said through her interpreter.
You will release a proclamation. Anyone harboring a radiant is subject to harsh punishment. We will search the tower to bring all of them under our care. Your soldiers and officers will be disarmed, but spared. Your people may continue living in the tower under our laws. All light eyes, including you, will be made of equal status to dark eyes. You are humans, nothing more, nothing less. The will of a singer must be obeyed immediately, and humans may not carry weapons. Otherwise, I am content to let them continue their occupations and even engage in trade, a privilege not extended to most humans in Alethkar.
I can't give up the Knight's Radiant to execution, Navani said.
Then we will kill them all as they lie unconscious, the fused said. And once finished, we will approach you with less lenient terms of surrender. Conversely, we can make an accommodation now, and perhaps your Radiance will live. I cannot promise I won't change my mind, but I don't intend to execute them. We simply need to be certain they are properly restrained.
They're unconscious. How much more restraint do they need?
Raboniel didn't reply. She flipped through the pages.
I agree to these terms, Navani said. The tower is yours. If your people approach my men with a white flag bearing a circle painted black, they will surrender.
Several regals went running with the news, and Navani wished them the wind's own speed.
What have you done with my scholars, and the soldiers down there in these rooms?
Some are dead, Raboniel said through the interpreter. But not many.
Navani closed her eyes. Some? Which of her friends had been killed in this incursion? Was she foolhardy for resisting as long as she had?
No, not if it bought us time to put the shield up.
She knew very little about the sibling and this tower, but at least now she had a chance. Only by working with the enemy, pretending to be docile and controlled, would she find opportunity to restore the radiance.
You drew these? Raboniel asked through her interpreter, turning around the pages. They were indeed some of Navani's sketches, more airships, of a more practical design, now that they better understood the mechanics of flight. They were signed by her seal.
Yes, Navani said. The fused read through them further. Then, remarkably, she spoke in Alethi, heavily accented but understandable.
Is it common for human queens of this era to be engineers?
This startled her attendant Regal, who seemed to not have known this lady of wishes could speak Alethi, or perhaps she was surprised to hear one so high speak to a human.
I have unusual hobbies, Navani said.
Raboniel folded the sheet of paper and finally met Navani's eyes.
They are remarkable. I would like to hire you.
Hire me? Navani asked, taken aback.
You are no longer a queen, but you are obviously a talented engineer. I am told the scholars of this tower respect you. So, I would hire you to work on Fabriel projects for me. I assure you, being in my employ will be a far more rewarding job than carrying water or washing clothing.
What game is this? Navani thought. Surely this fused didn't actually expect Navani to design fabrials for the enemy.
Carrying water or washing clothing is fine work, Navani said. I've done both before in my life. Neither will involve giving secrets to an enemy who, I'm afraid, will inevitably use them to kill and conquer my people.
True, Raboniel said. You are not prideful. I respect that. But consider my offer before rejecting it. If you are close to me, you would have a much easier time tracking what I'm doing, spying on my projects. You will also have greater opportunity to sneak information out to your husband, in hope of an eventual rescue. I know many things about Stormlight and Voidlight that you do not. Pay attention, and I suspect you'd learn more from me than you'd give up.
Navani felt her mouth go dry, searching the fused's red eyes, glowing faintly from her corrupted soul.
Storms. Raboniel said it all so calmly. This creature was ancient, thousands of years old. What secrets must her mind hold?
Careful, Navani thought to herself. If she's thousands of years old, she's had thousands of years to practice manipulating people.
I will consider the offer, Navani said.
Refer to me as Ancient One, or Lady of Wishes, Raboniel said, as you no longer have the rank to ignore my title. I will put you with your scholars. Discuss it together, then inform me of your decision.
The soldiers led Navani away, and just like that, she had lost another throne.
43. Men and Monsters. Regardless, please make yourself known to me when you travel my lands. It is distressing that you think you need to move in the shadows. By the time they heard confirmation that the queen had surrendered, sunlight was beginning to stream through the windows of the clinic. Kaladin and his family had spent the entire night seeing patients. 20 hours, a full day, without sleep. Even the exhaustion spren near Kaladin seemed tired, swirling slowly, lethargic. The messenger woman sat down at their table in the clinic, bleary-eyed and wearing a disheveled uniform, as she accepted a cup of cold tea from Kaladin's father.
"The queen attempted a final push to restore the radiance," the woman said. "I don't know what that entailed, only that the soldiers involved are dead now. I've been running messages to the neighborhoods on the sixth floor. But yes, in answer to your question, I've seen Queen Navani and the head of the fused army together. She confirmed the surrender to me. We are to live under Singer law and not resist."
"Storm winds," Kaladin whispered. "I never realized how blind I'd feel without span reads." It had taken hours for any sort of factual information to filter up to the sixth floor.
"So we're supposed to go right back to living under their rule," Kaladin's mother said from her seat at the table.
"It wasn't so bad," Liren said. "The High Lords won't like it, but it won't matter much for the rest of us."
"Fabrials don't work," Hesina said. "We can't heat our rooms, not to mention our food. The water pumps will have halted. This tower won't remain livable for long."
"The fused use their powers," Liren replied. "Maybe if we infuse the Fabrials with void light, they'll work."
"Pardon, Bright Lord," the scout said, "but that feels wrong for many reasons."
Kaladin had started rummaging in the cupboard for something to eat, so he didn't see his father's reaction at being called Bright Lord. He could guess, though. It was an odd situation anyway, considering that Liren's eyes hadn't changed. He'd simply been adopted into Kaladin's house. Rank was becoming a jumbled mess these days.
"Kaladin, son," Hesina said, "why don't you go lie down?"
"Why?" he said, getting out a stack of flatbread, then counting how many pieces they had.
"You've been prowling about like a caged animal," she said.
"No, I haven't."
"Son,"
she said in a calm but infuriatingly wise voice. He set down the bread and felt at his brow, which was cold from sweat. He took a deep breath, then turned around to face them, his father leaning against the wall, his mother at the table with the messenger woman. She had white and gray hair, but was young enough that it seemed premature, and had a pair of white gloves tucked into her belt. An Alethi master servant, doing double duty as a messenger.
"You're all taking this too calmly," Kaladin said, tossing up his hands. "Don't you realize what this means? They control the tower. They control the Oath Gates. This is it. The war is over."
"Bright Lord Dalinar still has the bulk of the Radiance with him," Alili, the messenger, said. "And our armies were mostly deployed around the world."
"And now they're all isolated," Kaladin said. "We can't fight a war on multiple fronts without the Oath Gates. And what if the enemy can repeat what they did here? What if they start making Radiant powers go away on every battlefield?"
That quieted her. Kaladin tried to imagine what the war would be like without Windrunners or Edge Dancers. Already the battlefields were starting to look very little like the ones he'd known during his days as a spearman. Fewer large-scale formations maneuvering against other blocks of men. Those were too easy to disrupt from above or by other types of fused. Men spent their days in protected camps, making only sudden surges to claim ground and shove away the enemy. Battles stretched on for months, instead of occurring in decisive engagements. Nobody quite knew how to fight a war like this. Well, nobody on their side, at least.
"I keep waiting," Kaladin said, wiping his brow again, "for the thunder to hit. The lightning struck last night. We saw the flash and need to brace ourselves for the shockwave."
"Bright Lord," Alili said, "pardon, but maybe you could help the other Radiants to do whatever you did."
"What did I do?"
"That's what I'm asking," she said. "Again, pardon, but Bright Lord Stormblessed, you're the sole Radiant I've seen in the tower who is still standing. Whatever the enemy did, it knocked out all the others. Every single one. Except you."
He thought of Teft lying on the slab in the other room. They'd spooned broth into his mouth, and he had taken it, stirring and muttering softly between mouthfuls. The long night weighed on Kaladin. He did need rest. Probably should have taken it hours ago. But he worried about his patients, the men suffering from battle shock. Before all this had happened, he'd gotten them rooms on the fourth floor, among the men who had lost arms or legs in the war, and who now did work maintaining gear for other soldiers. Kaladin's patients had been making real progress. He could imagine exactly how they felt now, though, living through another horror as the battle, so frequently a source of nightmares to them, found them again. They must be beside themselves. Not just them, Kaladin thought, wiping his brow again with his hand. The messenger woman rose and stretched, then bowed and moved on her way to continue delivering the news. Before she reached the front door, however, Syl zipped in from underneath it, twirled around in a few circles, then zipped back out. "Enemy soldier," Kaladin said under his breath to his parents, "coming this way." Indeed, as the messenger left, a singer wearing a sleek regal form peeked in to check on Kaladin and his parents. The singer lingered only a short time before turning away. There weren't enough of them yet to guard each and every home. Kaladin suspected that as more and more singers moved into the tower, he and his family wouldn't be able to speak as openly as they'd been doing so far this morning. "We should get some sleep," Laren said to Kaladin. "The other townspeople," Kaladin began. "Lara and I will visit them," Hesina said, rising. "I got some sleep earlier." "But, son," Laren said, "if the Radiants are in comas, that means no edge dancers. And no regrowth. You and I need sleep because we're going to become very busy men over the next few days. There's an entire tower full of frightened people, and likely as not a few hot-headed soldiers will take it upon themselves to make trouble despite the Queen's orders. They're all going to need two rested surgeons." Hesina gave her husband a fond touch on the cheek with her safe hand, then a kiss. She pulled a handkerchief from her pocket and gave it to Kaladin as he found himself yet again wiping his brow. Then she left to go visit Laurel, who had seen the messenger before them and already knew the situation. Kaladin reluctantly joined his father and walked down the long hallway past the patient rooms toward the family's living quarters. "What if I'm one of those hotheads?" Kaladin asked. "What if I can't live with this?" Laren stopped in the hallway. "I thought we'd discussed this already, son. You think I can ignore the fact that the enemy has conquered my home?" Kaladin said. "You think you can just turn me into a good, well-behaved slave like me?" Laren asked with a sigh. His eyes flicked up, likely noting the brands on Kaladin's forehead, mostly covered by his hair. "What would have happened, son, if instead of trying so hard to escape all those years, you'd instead proven yourself to your masters? What if you'd shown them you could heal instead of kill? How much misery would you have saved the world if you'd used your talents instead of your fists? You're telling me to be a good slave and do what I'm told. I'm telling you to think," his father snapped. "I'm telling you that if you want to change the world, you have to stop being part of the problem." Laren calmed himself with obvious difficulty, making fists and breathing in deeply. "Son, think about what all those years spent fighting did to you. How they broke you." Kaladin looked away, not trusting himself to answer. "Now," Laren said, "think about these last few weeks. How good it felt to be helping for once. There is more than one way to help." "And your nightmares?" Laren asked. "The cold sweats, the times where your mind numbs? Was that caused by my kind of help, or your kind?" "Son, our mandate is to find those who are hurt, then see them cared for. We can do that even if the enemy has conquered us." In a way, Kaladin could understand what his father said. "Your words make sense up here," Kaladin said, tapping his head. "But not down here." He slapped his breast.
"That's always been your problem, son, letting your heart override your head."
"My head can't be trusted sometimes," Kaladin said. "Can you blame me? Besides, isn't the entire reason we became surgeons because of the heart? Because we care?"
"We need both heart and mind," Laren said. "The heart might provide the purpose, but the head provides the method, the path. Passion is nothing without a plan. Wanting something doesn't make it happen." I can acknowledge, have to acknowledge, that you accomplished great things serving Dalinar Kholin. But with the Radiance down and most of the King's surgeons on the battlefield, we are what stands between the people of this tower and Deathspren. You acknowledge that you don't think right sometimes? Then trust me. Trust my thoughts.
Kaladin grimaced, but nodded. It was true that his thoughts had proven, time after time, that they couldn't be trusted. Besides, what did he think he was going to do? Fight a war against the invaders all by himself? After Navani had surrendered? Before retiring, they checked on the unconscious people in the patient rooms. The stone ward was completely out cold, less responsive than Teft, though Lirin was able to get her to take soup by spooning it to her lips. Kaladin studied her, checking her eyes, her heart rate, her temperature. Then he moved over to Teft. The bearded windrunner shifted, his eyes closed, and when Kaladin put broth to his lips, he took it far more eagerly. His hands twitched, and though Kaladin couldn't make out anything he was saying, he kept muttering under his breath. "He's a windrunner of the same oath as me," Kaladin thought. "I'm awake when the others fell. Teft is close to being awake." Was there a connection? Whatever fabrial the enemy was using to do this, perhaps it didn't work as well on windrunners. He needed to see the other Radiants and compare them. There had been around 24 other windrunners in the tower. His status as a surgeon should let him visit them and check their vitals. Storms, his father was correct. Kaladin could accomplish far more by backing down than he could by fighting. Syl came zipping into the room a short time later. Lirin noticed her too, so she'd made herself visible to him. "Syl," Kaladin said, "will you check again to see if you can spot Teft's Spren? He seems like he's coming closer to waking, so she might be coming more visible."
"No time,"
Syl said, turning into the shape of a young woman with a sword strapped to her waist, wearing a scout's uniform. She halted in the air, standing as if on an invisible platform.
"They're coming."
"Another eagle coming to check in on us?" Kaladin said.
"Worse," Syl said. "A group of soldiers led by a different regal is searching each residence, methodically heading this direction. They're hunting for something."
"Or someone," Kaladin said. "They've heard that Stormblessed is awake."
"Don't jump to conclusions, Sutton," Lirin said. "If they were searching for you specifically, they'd have come straight here. I'll go see what this is about. If they are looking for you, escape out the window and we'll decide what to do later."
Kaladin withdrew into the family room, which had doors to their bedrooms, including the small closet where little Oroden was sleeping in his crib. Kaladin didn't go to his bedroom, though. He cracked the door into the hallway and was able to hear voices when his father opened the door at the far front of the clinic. Unfortunately, he couldn't hear what they were saying. He nodded to Syl, who risked zipping out to get closer and overhear. Before she could return, the voices drew nearer. Kaladin made out the regal by the rhythm of his speech.
"Don't care if you're a surgeon, Dark Eyes," the soldier said. "I have the Queen's sealed writ here, and its instructions supersede what you might have been told by messengers. All Radiants are to be taken into custody."
"These are my patients," Lirin said. "They were entrusted to my care. Please, they're no danger to you like this."
"Your queen accepted these terms," the regal replied. "Complain to her."
Kaladin peeked out the door into the hallway. A regal led 5 ordinary warform singers. Their larger figures appeared cramped in the stone corridor as they walked to the 2 patient rooms. So they weren't after him, not specifically. They were searching for fallen Radiants. Indeed, the regal gestured his attendants toward the first exam room. 2 moved out soon after, carrying the fallen storm ward between them. They shoved Lirin aside as they carted her off down the hallway. Syl came zipping back to Kaladin, agitated as she moved into the room with him.
"They don't seem to know about you, only that the surgeon has a couple of fallen Radiants."
Kaladin nodded, though he'd grown tense.
"I can care for these far better than you can," Lirin said. "Removing them like this could be dangerous to their health, even deadly."
"Why would we care?"
the regal said, both tone and rhythm sounding amused. 2 of his soldiers took the stone ward's squires, 1 each, and hauled them out of the second exam room.
"I think we should throw them all off the tower and rid ourselves of a huge problem. The Fused want us to collect them, though. Guess they want to have the fun of killing these themselves."
He's posturing, Kaladin thought. The Fused wouldn't go to the effort of taking the Radiants captive only to kill them. Would they? Did it matter? They were going to take Teft. The Regal moved into the first exam room, and Kaladin's father followed, making more objections. Kaladin stood with one hand on the wall, one hand on the door, breathing deeply. Wind surged through the window behind, brushing past him, bearing with it two twisting windspren that moved as lines of light. 100 objections held him. His father's arguments, his soul in fragments, the knowledge that he was probably too tired to be making decisions, the fact that the Queen had decided it was best to end hostilities. So many reasons to stay where he was. But one reason to move. They were going to take Teft. Kaladin pulled open the door and stepped into the hallway, feeling the inevitable shift of a boulder perched on the top of a slope. Just beginning to tip.
"Kaladin?" Syl said, landing on his shoulder.
"It was a nice dream, wasn't it, Syl?" he asked. "That we could escape, find peace at long last."
"Such a wonderful dream," she whispered.
"You ready for this?" he asked. She nodded, and he stepped into the doorway of the exam room. Two enemy soldiers remained in the room, one Warform and the Stormform Regal. The Regal had helped get Teft up onto the regular soldier's shoulders. Liren looked straight at Kaladin, then shook his head urgently, his eyes going wide. "You will put him down," Kaladin said to the singers, "and leave quietly. Send one of the Fused to get him if they're so insistent." The two froze, and the Regal sized him up.
"Go back to bed, boy," he eventually said. "You don't want to try my patience today."
Liren dashed forward, trying to push Kaladin out of the room. With a quick pivot to the side, Kaladin sent his father tumbling into the hall and hopefully out of danger. He stepped back into the doorway.
"Why not go for reinforcements?" Kaladin said to the two singers, almost more a plea than a request. "Don't press this issue right now."
The Regal gestured for his companion to set Teft back onto the exam table, and for a moment Kaladin thought they might actually do what he said. Then the Regal unhooked the axe from its sheath at his side.
"No!"
Liren said from behind.
"Don't do this!"
In response, Kaladin drew in a breath of stormlight. His body became alight with the inner storm, and wisps of luminescent smoke began to curl from his skin. That gave the two singers pause until the Warform pointed.
"That's him, Bright Lord. The one the pursuer is searching for. He matches the description exactly."
The Regal grinned.
"You're going to make me very rich, human."
Dark red lightning crackled across his skin. The Warform shied away, hitting the counter and causing surgery implements to clink against one another. Liren grabbed Kaladin from behind. Kaladin stood quietly on that precipice, balanced. The Regal leaped forward, swinging his axe, and Kaladin stepped off the edge. He shook free of his father's grip and shoved him backward with one hand, then caught the Regal's arm with his other before the axe could fall. Kaladin braced himself for the jolt of energy that shot through him at touching a storm form. He'd fought these before. It stunned him for a moment nonetheless, so he wasn't ready to guard as the Regal cuffed him across the face, ripping his cheek with the barbed carapace on the back of his hand. Stormlight would heal that. Kaladin got his other hand up, preventing another punch while continuing to hold back the axe. The two struggled for a moment, then Kaladin managed to get the advantage, tipping their center of balance forward so he could twist and ram his shoulder into the Regal. Storms, it hurt. That carapace was no joke. Still, the maneuver put his opponent momentarily off balance, so Kaladin was able to control the fight, spinning his enemy around and slamming the creature's hand into the corner of an exam table. A resounding snap split the air, and the carapace on the hand cracked. The Regal hissed in pain and dropped the axe. But then he pivoted hard and rammed his side into Kaladin's chest, shoving him against the counter. Kaladin's father was shouting, but the Warform, instead of helping, remained by the opposite wall. He didn't seem eager to attack a Radiant. Without Stormlight, Kaladin wouldn't have been able to withstand the constant jolts of energy from the Stormform's touch. As it was, he was able to hold on, not letting the enemy force him back too much, until the Regal tried another punch. At the wind-up, Kaladin hooked his leg around the foot of his opponent, then sent them both to the ground. He landed with a grunt and tried to roll into position to choke his opponent unconscious. If the fight ended without bloodshed, perhaps his father would forgive him. Unfortunately, Kaladin hadn't done a lot of wrestling. He knew enough to keep himself from being pinned easily, but the Regal was stronger than he was, and that carapace kept jabbing in surprising places and interfering with his holds. The Regal leveraged his superior weight and strength, twisting Kaladin around with a grunt. Then, with Kaladin pinned beneath him, the creature began pummeling him in the face with his good fist, the one that hadn't cracked. Kaladin breathed in a gasp of Stormlight, draining the spheres on the counter. He brought his fist up and slammed it into the back of the hand that had cracked earlier. His enemy flinched, and Kaladin was able to kick free, throwing the Regal off, though both slammed into the counters in the tight confines as he did so. Kaladin scrambled to find his feet so he could attack his enemy from above, but the Regal began to glow red. The hairs on Kaladin's arms stood up, and he had a fraction of a second to duck to the side as a flash of light and an ear-splitting crack filled the room. He hit the ground, blinded and deafened, the sharp scent of a lightning strike filling his